This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. No human being is free of bias. We're mostly unaware of them, though. Politicians are not, though, and they use the unconscious biases of their voters to convince us what is true and what is false, and vice versa. Here to talk about this, we have from Penn State, Media Studies Professor Shyam Sunder. Shyam, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Can you explain what an unconscious bias is? How do we, if they're unconscious, how do we even detect them?
Well, the reason it's unconscious is we do not detect them. We go about life letting these biases play a role in the way we consume content as well as in the way we look at things. This is why we practice selective exposure, which is we look at only certain things that interest us. And the reason they interest us is because they play on our implicit inbuilt biases. And so we tend to look for things that are consonant with our worldview, with our background and our prior experiences. That this is called confirmation bias. We are looking for confirmation of whatever we already believe in.
And okay, so if we're unaware that we have all of these things, and I assume you're talking about everybody,
every single
human being has unconscious biases, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how does a scientist detect them? How do you know I have them?
So we will look for people's background, and then we will give them content that either is consonant with their background or dissonant with their background. And then we see if there is a greater preference for consonant content versus that which is dissonant.
So you're going to tell me things that I'm primed to agree with.
Right. First, I will find out about your background. And
right.
Then I'll say, okay, you're of this kind of political persuasion or you have this kind of prior experience. And then based on that, I will construct content that I think you will go down easy with your worldview, and also construct content that might be somewhat distant from your worldview. And I will provide you with both types of content, with equal amount of, play in terms of headline size and whatnot. There should be no other biases except the fact that the content is different. And I would do the same with a number of different people with different worldviews. In fact, people who have the opposite worldview of what you do. And then I'll find out if indeed there is a systematic difference.
All right. Let me bring into this conversation Kennesaw State psychology professor Roxanne Donovan. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi. How are you, Celeste?
So we're talking about this in terms of generalities. Let me try to get more specific. Let's say, for example, that I'm from California, and so you decided to test whether I think alfalfa sprouts belong in a sandwich. They do.
Just to be clear, right?
Right. But you're testing to see if I have an unconscious bias because I grew up in a state that eats alfalfa sprouts, right? And so you're going to try to find out if somebody from Iowa would totally disagree with that. Is that relatively accurate?
Yep, that's exactly how it works.
So what is a confirmation bias? Is that what we're saying, that it's confirming something I already believe?
Confirmation bias is when we look for information that already helps us go towards something that we've already thought. So I believe that alfalfa is necessary on a sandwich, right? So then I look for all this information that says alfalfa is wonderful, it's nutritious, it's great.
Right.
And I say, ha ha, this is why alfalfa needs to be on a sandwich. I'm in Iowa and I think, oh, alfalfa stinks. And then I look for information that says it tastes bad, it's not as nutritious as we think it is, it's
right.
not as nutritious as spinach. So
am
I say,
also
aha.
Ignoring the stuff that goes against what I believe?
Oh, exactly. In fact, I'm not even seeking it out, but when I find it, I will interpret the data to support my preconceived notions.
Okay, so the reason we're talking about this, obviously, is because this has come up quite a bit in our recent politics. And one of the things, Shyam Sunder, is that people say that that Donald Trump is especially adept, very good at exploiting this. How does someone exploit an unconscious bias?
Well, he has a certain understanding of what large swath of the Midwest American public in general are looking for in terms of the political talking points and things like that, and that's what he went about doing during his campaign. So he was speaking to them in terms of certain issues that were dear to their heart, regardless of whether they were the centerpieces of his policy. So every politician does this in a way, but Donald Trump, I think, is especially adept at bringing, was at least during his campaign, at bringing to the fore those issues that mattered most to many of the Midwest workers, the so-called Rust Belt, and also in the South he had a slightly different. So it's all about messaging that is specific to groups in different parts of the country.
And sometimes politicians, this is not isolated to either political party. Both of them, all of them do this to some extent or another. But to some extent, what they're able to do is something that happens in all kinds of arenas. And it's the reason why we're afraid to go swimming, right, Roxanne? It's the reason why we think that we might get eaten by sharks if we're swimming in the Atlantic Ocean. It's something called the availability heuristic. What does that mean?
It's our tendency to prioritize information that comes to mind most easily. So if I've seen Jaws, I'm going to think that being attacked by a shark is highly likely because that image of that movie is in my head.
Sticks with you.
It sticks with me. So when I think water and I think safety, what pops into my head is the shark attack. Even though data show that it's highly, very, very highly unlikely that I'm going to be attacked by a shark in the water. But because that information is coming to my head, then I'm going to misattribute, be illogical about my odds of being attacked by a shark.
So what I don't understand here, Sham, is why we would allow this information to cross over. And by that I mean, it's not surprising that this movie Jaws would stick in our heads, right? It's designed to do that. But why would we then, our brains, conflate that with a factual news item?
Well, the reality is that we are living in an information overload situation. So all of us are so-called cognitive misers. You know, social psychologists talk about, us expending only so much mental energy as is necessary. So we will not seek out all, the full truth or the most comprehensive information on any given topic. Instead, what we will do is, find the shortest cut, so to speak. So the availability heuristic basically is something that comes to our mind. The prevalence of shark attacks comes to your mind, or because of its vividness of portrayal in the media, and that's what makes it more available to us. And if it is available, then we inflate its probability in our daily lives. And likewise, anything that has a very vivid imagery in the media especially is going to stick with us. And so because we are cognitive misers, we are not going to do independent research to find all kinds of corroborating information or even counterfactual information. Instead, we will go with that which is readily available in our minds.
So this suggests, Roxanne, that we're not actually talking about a malfunction of the brain, that this is actually a survival technique, an ability to deal with a deluge of information. Is that accurate?
And that's one theory, that there is so much input that our brain is exposed to that we are required to whittle that down so that we are able to survive in the environment. And one of the ways that we do that is our brain takes shortcuts or tricks, biases, cognitive biases, in order to help us make decisions, quick decisions that will help us survive, or at least did back in the day.
But the danger, of course, is that they're easily exploited.
They are easily exploited, and it seems like in this political climate, it is especially exploited because when we fear, when we're under threat, when we're stressed, when we're angry, we're more likely to rely on our prejudices and our preconceived beliefs, even if they're flawed.
If you're just joining me, I'm talking with Kennesaw State psychology professor Roxanne Donovan. We're talking about cognitive bias and how that translates into politics. Also with us is Penn State media studies professor Sham Sunder. Then one of the ways that this is, it's not just modern, because Sham, we're also talking about a phrase, the whole phrase welfare queen is an example of this, of the availability heuristic, right? This mental shortcut that takes us to it was a made up story. That Ronald Reagan used, and yet it persists to today. What makes a story like that so stick in our, not only our history, but our minds, but it makes it so lasting?
Yeah, these are what we call exemplars. You know, these specific stories and, in fact, specific profiles of people are exemplars that, in fact, even media use. You know, when you go out and report a story, what you want is a good quote, a person who exemplifies that story in a significant, vivid way. And, you know, those of us who study online news or even regular news for that matter, we know that storytelling is enhanced by powerful examples. And that's why we go after quotes, we go after people who can tell the story for us instead of relying primarily on dry facts or statistical data put out by government agencies. So when we have a story, even you guys get a piece of data from a government agency saying, you know, there are as many as 7% of the Atlanta's population that is on drugs, for example. What you would try and do is go and get some quotes or do some profiles of people who are in that 7%. But what happens is by focusing on that 7%, you're ignoring the 93%. And at a later point in time, when people who have heard your story think about this issue of drugs, they will tend to exaggerate the prevalence much beyond 7%. And that's what we call in the media field as exemplification effect. And that's primarily driven by the availability heuristic and also by a related heuristic called representativeness heuristic, which is the idea that that exemplar represents the larger population, which in fact is false because, as you know, news people go after exemplars that are unique. You know, the whole man bites dog paradigm that we follow in news, which is the idea that you don't report that which is usual, we only report that which is unusual. But then when reporting that which is unusual, we also forget the fact that psychologically people are processing those things as reflections of the true state of affairs in the world.
And Roxanne, some of these things are so persistent that they have influenced policy today. For example, the crime bill that came in under Clinton, and Hillary Clinton has since apologized for her use of the word super predator, which was supposed to describe a remorseless criminal, young criminal that actually did not ever exist and ended up disproportionately affecting African Americans. But the idea of that persists today. How easily is it to create something like that just that feeds into all the things we're talking about, feeds into our confirmation biases, feeds into our availability heuristic and what he's calling the miserliness of our data production? How easy is that?
It's actually pretty easy. We have a bias that we haven't talked about yet, which is a tendency to group people into us versus them categories. That's called in-group, out-group bias. And it's easy for us to process information if we see ourselves in groups. And we have an in-group favoritism bias. So we see people in our group better than those in the out-group. And we also have a tendency to clump out-group members together, see them as less individuals and more as a group. So if you're thinking about what underlies prejudice, so hostility toward a group, right? In-group, out-group has to be the foundation. So if you have hostility toward a group, and you're trying to squash that because in our society, at least previously, it wasn't a good idea to show your prejudice. So you're using cognitive energy to minimize behaving in ways consistent with that prejudice, so behaving in discriminatory ways. And then someone shows you a picture, say you have a prejudice against Black people, you think they're criminals, right? You're trying really hard not to show that prejudice. Someone shows you a picture of a super predator, and that happens to be a Black man, then all of a sudden you have justification to express that prejudice. And when we have justification, we are more likely to behave in prejudice-consistent ways. And if we feel like we're threatened in some way, so if we fear that terrorists are going to blow up our country, or if we fear we're stressed.
Yeah.
So threat, fear, stress, tiredness, all of those things increase our likelihood to act in prejudicial ways. And also it doesn't even have to happen to
right.
you. It could be happening to other people. It could be something amplified in the media. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. I was right to think these people were bad, the outgroup.
Right.
And then you begin to act in discriminatory ways.
So Sham, in the final 2 minutes that we have, how do I get around this? If this is unconscious, how do I stop myself from behaving or thinking this way?
So one of the things that we do to inoculate people against these biases and falling for these heuristics is to make them aware of these biases. So a fundamental origin of a lot of these biases come from sources. So many of us, for example, ignore the fact that we get information from a variety of sources of different levels of credibility. And so we sometimes tend not to pay attention to sources in our social media feeds, where, in fact, fake news breeds in a very fertile way. And so we need to make sure that people are paying attention to the kinds of sources, even when it comes to political viewpoints, whether this is a left-leaning source or a right-wing source. Being made aware of these different source attributes can go a long way in helping adjust one's way of consuming or calibrating the information that's coming in.
That is media studies professor Sham Sunder, excuse me, Sham. He is from Penn State, and we also spoke with Kennesaw State psychology professor Roxanne Donovan. Roxanne and Sham, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. But if you have an example of this, maybe a cognitive bias that you're aware of rather than being unconscious, I'd love to hear it. And especially a time when you changed your mind successfully, because that's a relatively rare event. You know how to reach us. It's 404-500-9457. You can also reach us on Twitter at OST Talk or on Facebook. For today, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.